welcome back. I hope you had a lovely Yontif. We sprinted through a text before we broke up, before the Yomim Tovim, and we're on page 196 in the Kuzari. And Reb Yehuda Halevi, in the last couple of pages, was involved in an exercise which is done by a number of Meforshim. It's not unique to the Kuzari, although, and it's not clear to me, he might be the first who does this, I'm not sure, but he's certainly one of the first who does this. But it is to try and break down a communal observance or a communal structure and show how it is a macrocosm of the human body. And to show how everything that was done in first in the Mishkan and then in the temple represents different organs of the human body. And this is a theme that recurs in various statements of Chazal and in the way that the Meforshim understand the words of Chazal, that one of the byproducts of the golden calf was that before the sin of the Egel, each individual Jew, through the power within his own neshama and his own body, could bring down the Shechina as an individual. Once the Jewish people sinned with the Chet HaEgel, they lost that individual power, and now it would be necessary to unify as a nation in order to have that collective energy to be able to bring the Shechina down into this world. And so if the Jewish people represent the neshama of that collective body, the Mishkan and all of its accessory parts represent the body of the communal nation of Israel. So just like an individual human being has a body and soul, the Jewish people have a body and soul, the body being the Mishkan, and the Karbanos represent the bodily functions. Like even he talked about the idea of the digestive system being represented by the Karbanos, and the Levian working in the Beis HaMikdash corresponding to the movers of the internal organs, you know, the animation that takes place within your body, the breathing and the peristalsis and all of the other bodily functions that are necessary for the body to be healthy and to continue functioning. So he does this in very great detail, and that's why we didn't spend a lot of time on it, because it's one way of looking at it, but it's the overarching idea is as I've just described for you. And what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says in paragraph number 18, to sort of conclude this discussion, is something that recurs throughout the Kuzari. All was done with order and planned by divine wisdom. And if you remember, one of the central themes of the Kuzari is that there is a certain precision to mitzvot that surpasses human understanding. There's no way that a human being could possibly replicate the system of the service of Hashem without a Torah directing us, because Hashem has such a powerful knowledge of how the physical universe interacts with the spiritual realm that Hashem can tell us exactly which bodily actions will activate certain spiritual receptors in the spiritual realm. And we don't have that vision, we don't have that understanding, and therefore we need to rely on the mitzvahs of the Torah. But this, for Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, nothing is arbitrary. Everything, you know, the smallest measurement and the smallest protocol and procedure that's detailed either by the Torah or by the Mishnah is all with tremendous precision. And then he says, I do not declare, heaven forbid, that the absolute intention of the sacrificial order was as I have described it. The intention was actually more wondrous and lofty. So he's basically saying, this is my hypothesis, this is what I see, this is the insight that I have, but I'm sure there's much more beneath the surface that I've been able to reveal. After all, the sacrificial order is part of Hashem's Torah, and one who accepts the Torah completely without first rationalizing it with his intellect is greater than one who rationalizes and investigates everything. Now, this sentence is really what I'd like to spend a little bit of time on today. He says, it's a pretty bold statement if you break it down. His statement is, a person who accepts the Torah completely without first rationalizing it with his intellect is greater than someone who rationalizes and investigates everything. Now, at face value, that doesn't sound too good. I mean, isn't it better to be intellectually engaged with what you're doing and to be able to have a very good rational explanation for every single mitzvah that you do? I mean, wouldn't that give you more meaning and sense of purpose if every time I shake a lulav or blow a shofar or make a bracha, I feel that sense of understanding, really, I do get it, I understand this really resonates with me and I fully appreciate what's going on here? And Rabbi Yehuda Levi seems to be saying the exact opposite. And he seems to be saying that it's much better for a person to accept the Torah completely without first rationalizing it with his intellect. So how do you understand that statement, Mrs. Sachachevsky? Welcome back.
Thank you. He says at first, without first, that's the key. It's nasev nishma. First you accept that you're going to do it, then you look into understanding it.
Good.
It's no contradiction.
Good. Okay. Yes, Patricia.
I'd like to draw an analogy between, or a comparison with the power of music during prayer, and go back, for example, to Hallel with the choir when you were davening. There was no thought in my head at all, except the power of music, the power of the Kehillah, the emotion that I felt. Sometimes too much thinking distracts from your ability to feel the presence of God. You're too busy thinking about Him to feel. I think this is part of what he's getting at here, that if you constantly rationalize, you'll never get really too far beyond your own head. You will never be able to open up to the just to the pure feeling of as close as we can get to oneness.
Excellent. I think both statements really have a lot of are both very powerful. The one of Nasa Vinishma is that this is the starting point. You have to accept things on faith and tradition first and then work through a process. Not wait until you get to that intellectual stage before accepting the Torah. You have to accept it first and then work through the intellectual and rational understanding. And then Patricia's point is where our mental faculties are only a portion of the totality of who we are. And sometimes our mental faculties can get in the way of letting the rest of us, the remainder of who we are, be able to embrace what we're experiencing in the performance of the mitzvah, whether it's prayer or any other kind of mitzvah. Okay, I mean, it's a beautiful thought, and I think that any of us who have been engaged in meaningful prayer can definitely relate to what you're saying. I know that there will be skeptics among us who might think that, well, without the intellect, what is there? It's just some soft and fuzzy feeling. But it is more than that. You're right. Yes.
Well, Hashem gave us, He wanted us to know the intellect. He wanted us to ask questions. It's not all just do and just base your religion on emunah. The yeshivas and the school encourage kids to ask questions. Because
right.
I really think those things bring you closer. Well, for some of us, when you see science and how the body works and the stars, and when you combine those things with science, in my personal case, it's like, it brings me even closer to my creator.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes, and so that's sort of the other side of this coin, which is we can't reject the intellect. And how are we supposed to deal with it? And what, of course, do you say to the person who says, I didn't feel anything at Hallel. I was just looking at my watch waiting for this thing to end. And I'm looking for, to me, the intellect is where it's all at. And so what do we say to people like that? And what about our rich, very rich tradition of asking questions, of challenging and answering questions?
I would just say that there's a danger also in putting reasons behind the mitzvah. For example, kashrut. You can say, well, they had kashrut because for health reasons, but things are different now, so that it's not a problem, so I can eat what I want.
You're right, and Elaine's point is very well taken. If you overemphasize the intellect, and anything that's not intellectually sound, you'll feel you need to reject, and that's not okay. So, yeah.
How would we relate this to our davening, where if many of us don't understand the words, if they're in Aramaic, or they're in difficult Hebrew, or we don't understand Hebrew, is davening in English acceptable? Is it more, it comes back to the same question.
Right, it's a much longer conversation. I'm sure we must have had this talk about prayer in the past, but in a nutshell, there's a difference of opinion, and it really boils down to, for the Rambam, prayer without understanding is meaningless, because he calls prayer avodah shebalev. It's a service of your heart. If your heart is not engaged, you're basically doing nothing. At least that's what it seems like from the way he describes tefillah. There are others who understand it differently. They understand that tefillah, there's a certain incantational quality. Like just now, you were all saying Tehillim, right? How many of you understood exactly what you were saying when you said Tehillim? Okay, the Israelis. All right, go ahead. Okay, and the Mexicans. Okay, or some of the Mexicans. Okay. All right. But I would venture to guess that most people don't understand the Tehillim that they're saying, and feel nonetheless that they're doing something of value, that they're contributing something, that they're doing something positive, they're connecting in some way to Hashem and trying to influence Hashem to bring us to a positive result. So there is that exists as well. You know what? We should devote another shir for that entire topic of tefillah, but now's not the time. I wanted to spend just a few minutes discussing an essay from Rav Dessler that I actually reference in footnote 235. I think we'll only be able to start it today, because and I've actually cut out a big chunk of it. Today I just want to talk about Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya and what happened to him, and use this as a case study of a person who used his intellect improperly. And Rav Dessler starts off by asking the question, Eich haya efshar, if you see the beginning of the essay. He says, Eich haya efshar shetana gadol ke Elisha ben Abuya, Talmido shel Rabbi Akiva v'rabo shel Rabbi Meir, how could it be that such a great sage, Elisha ben Abuya, the student of Rabbi Akiva, the teacher of Rabbi Meir, Lamrot kol gadlus Torah so yatzel tarbus ra, despite all of his great Torah knowledge, how is it that he went OTD? Right? He went off the derech. Right? I tell you something, sometimes experiences shake you to the core. My mother sent me an email last week. She said, Rabbi so-and-so, who was your colleague in California, he's a little bit older than I am. He's actually a lot older than I am. And she told me, He left the pulpit in L.A., but she said he's not from anymore, and he started a blog about how to find meaning without God, and he's an atheist now, and that's frightening. It's almost like it's like an Elisha ben Avuya moment, and you think, oh, it only happened, in the times of the Mishnah. It just happened, this fellow whose beard was longer than mine, and his yarmulke was bigger than mine, had lost his faith, and he's an intelligent person, knows a lot of Torah, and had some kind of crisis. And I don't know how long he was experiencing this crisis, but whatever he went through came out at the other end a non-believer. So it does happen. So the question is, And that's why it says, the Chazal say, Al tamin ba'atzmacha ad yom osecha. Don't trust yourself. Don't believe in yourself fully until your dying day. There are great people who have had falls from greatness even at advanced stages of their lives. So you never know. You always have to do reality checks. You have to have people around you that tell you, hey, you're going off the deep end, man. You know, get a grip. And let's speak this out, and let's have a discussion, and let's figure this out together. Okay. So how could it happen to Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya? Kemo shemuva b'maseches Chagiga, as the Gemara discusses in Chagiga, davar ze bevaday tzarich hisbonenus yaseir kedei lahavino liishuro. We definitely need to understand this story in order to really get down to the bottom of it. Na'ayein b'divrei Elisha ben Avuya atzmo al sibos yitziyoso l'tarbusra. Let's look at what happened to Elisha ben Avuya as is recorded in the Gemara, the Talmud Yerushalmi, to see what happened to him over the course of his life to make him into a non-believer. So the Gemara first quotes, he's quoting from the Gemara, here's Tov acharis davar mereishiso. It says in Koheles that the end is much better than the beginning, because when you just start off at the beginning of life, you never know how someone's going to turn out. You have to see them at the end of life to see if they've lived a meaningful life. Tov acharis davar shehu tov mereishiso, ubi haya ma'aseh. And Elisha ben Avuya relates this. He says, the reason why what happened to me happened is because I didn't start off on the right foot. And he explains as follows. Avuya avi haya havi migdolei Yerushalayim. He said about himself, my father, Avuya, was one of the aristocrats of Jerusalem. Uvayom shaba l'mahuli kara l'chol gedolei Yerushalayim. On the day that it was time for my bris, he invited all of the dignitaries of Jerusalem, v'hoshivan b'bayis echad, u'l'Rebbe Eliezer u'l'Rebbe Yehoshua b'makom acher. So he placed all of the dignitaries at one head table, and he set up another head table just for the two great sages, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. They were the leaders of the Jewish community at the time. Min da'achlin v'shasin sharin u'metafchin u'merakdin amri adi'ilein askin biditu na'asok bididan. So he says that the great sages, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua, noticed that all of the other dignitaries were eating and drinking and dancing and clapping and singing and all of these other wonderful things. And so they said to each other, they're doing their method of celebration. Let's you and I celebrate in our special way. So Yashvu ben Yisasku b'divrei Torah. So they began to have a very, very deep Torah discussion. Yorda esh min hashamayim v'hikifa osan. And at that moment, a fire descended from heaven and surrounded Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yehoshua. Amar lon avuya abba. So my father, Avuya, notices this miraculous phenomenon, and he says to them, Gavrin, mabosam lisrof besi? He says, gentlemen, are you here to burn down my house? So amar lo, chas v'shalom. They said, no, God forbid. Eliyoshvin hayinu v'chozrin divrei Torah mitar l'neviim u'minneviim l'ksuvim. He says, we were just reviewing words of Torah. We were first learning Torah, then Navi, then Ksuvim, and we would go from one book to the next, and it was so exciting. B'hayu advarm smechem kinesinasan misinai lo ba'esh nitna. And he says, we were in such a joyous state, it felt like we were standing at Har Sinai, where a fire descended upon Har Sinai, so therefore the fire descended upon us. So Amar hol v'kach kocha shel Torah, im yiskayim haben hazeh l'Torah ani mafrisho. So Avuya said as follows, he says, if this is the power of Torah study, and it's not clear, of course, what he saw, there may be some metaphor involved in this, Agadita, but he definitely saw something special. He says, if this is the power of Torah, then I hereby make a pledge that if my son survives, in other words, in those days mortality was very high among children, but he says, if my son makes it to adulthood, I'm going to set him aside to make him into a scholar as well. Ulefi shaloha yisa kavanaso l'shamayim l'fichach lo niskayim ubi. But then Elisha says, he says, but you know what? That was my downfall because my father set me aside to be a scholar for ulterior motives. He wasn't interested in Torah lishma. He wasn't interested for Torah study, for Torah study's sake. He was interested in all the benefits that one gets in his life from Torah study, the miracles, the joy, the meaning, the purpose. And he says, and that's not considered to be lishma. And therefore, even though I became a great scholar, I eventually strayed. So Rav Dessler's first observation is Haresha Yitziyasa Litarbus Ra'a Haisamach Masharatzon Aviv Limsoroso Lilmo Torah Navami Toch Shalo Lishma. So therefore you see that Elisha ben Avuya's the first reason that is described by the Gemara as to why he went OTD is because of this Shalo Lishma, for ulterior motive aspect of his dedication. Kevin Shiraz Kavod Vahadar HaTorah, because his father saw the great glory that one gets in Torah study. Now let's take a look at the other reasons that are brought by the Gemara. What happened to Elisha during his lifetime that made him become a heretic? Vishah Shahaya Omed Mibes HaMedrash Harbei Sifrei Minim Nashu Mecheko. So first, the Gemara says that when he would stand up to leave the Beis Medrash, you know how in the olden days, you know, kids would be holding their textbook and there would be a comic book behind the textbook? So instead, or a Mad magazine. So instead of Elisha ben Avuya reading Mad magazine, he was reading books of Greek philosophy behind his Gemara. That's the way the Gemara describes it, okay? Uvemaseches Kiddushin Ra'a Echad Sha'ala V'natal Ha'em V'habonim V'yarad B'shalom. So the Gemara in Kiddushin describes a situation where a father told his son, go climb up the tree and send away the mother bird so that we can take the eggs. Those are the two mitzvahs for which the Torah promises long life. Unfortunately, the child fell from the tree and he perished. Fell to his death. And so Elisha ben Avuya says, how could it be that the mitzvahs for which the Torah promises a long life caused the death of this child? Okay, so obviously these are theological issues that Elisha ben Avuya was facing. Others say that what he saw after a great pogrom that the Romans had waged against the Jews during the period of, you know, shortly after the temple's destruction, he noticed that a pig was dragging the tongue of a great sage named Chutzpis HaMeturgaman. He was one of the people who would recite the shir of the Rosh Yeshiva. And how could this person now have his tongue, which had uttered such holy words of Torah, how could that now be dragged through the street by a pig? And therefore he said, Zu Torah v'zu schara, this is Torah and this is its reward. And that's what caused him led him to heresy. The Isa B'Yerushalmi, Ima Kishahaisu Muberes Bo Haisa Overes Al Batei Avodazara, V'Heiricha Me'oso Hamin, V'Haya Oso Hareach Mefapea B'Gufa Ki Irsa Shel Chachina. So there's another version in the Gemara in the Yerushalmi that says that when his mother was pregnant with him, she would pass by houses of idol worship, and she would smell the fragrant incense of the idolatry burning, and it entered into her nostrils and entered into Elisha ben Avuya's essence in some way, like the venom of a serpent. So if we were to categorize the two, you know, sources for Elisha ben Avuya's heresy, Rav Dessler says there are really two categories. Shtei sibot ikariot manukan. Ha'echad shekavanat aviv b'chinucho ha'ita shelo lishma. Number one, his father's whole rearing of Elisha ben Avuya to be a sage was for ulterior motives. And number two, v'ilu hasiba ha'acheret minus. Some kind of heresy, heretical thought, reading books of Greek philosophy, questioning God, theodicy questions, idolatry, and so forth. Skip the parentheses. Shtei sibot ei leyachad minus v'shelo lishma hishpiu sheyatza letarbus ra'a. These two reasons were the cause of Elisha ben Avuya leaving Judaism. Nispone na ma hakesher shebein shtei asibot. But let's think about the connection between these two reasons. And that's where we're going to hold it for today. And you may think, well, what's the connection to this essay of Rav Dessler to our discussion at hand? In the middle of the essay, he launches into a discussion of what true emunah is. What is faith? And what is the basis of why we believe what we believe? What is, and how do we reconcile faith and reason? Faith and reason are two sides of the same coin in any religious experience. There has to be a certain amount of faith, and there has to be a certain amount of reason or intellect involved. And how do we balance between the two? And how do we create a healthy dichotomy within ourselves that I can use my intellect to propel me to do greater things, but also that I'm not completely reliant upon my intellect when things don't compute, or when I see, God forbid, you know, tragedies happening to righteous people, people being stabbed, God forbid, who are righteous people, innocent people, children, God forbid. How do I reconcile that with my faith? My intellect can't compute it. It's not rational. How can a benevolent God do these things? So those are all the questions that plagued Elisha ben Avuya. And that's what caused him to, that led him to apostasy. So that's where we'll hold it. We'll hold it by the question. In other words, sort of like, let's examine this more carefully. Hold on to the page, God willing, for next week, and we'll continue.